I knew that my product was about 90-95% there. But the only way I was going to be able to tweak and make it even better is if I get in people's legs.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. A few years ago, Michelle Huey found herself in Missoula, Montana, contemplating her next career move. With a background in biotech and healthcare, Michelle decided to start her own venture. She launched Vim & Vigor, a company that creates and markets fashionable compression legwear. Over the past 4 years, Vim & Vigor has sold more than 250,000 pairs of designer compression socks online and in over 1,100 retail locations domestically and internationally. Michelle will share her insights into how Vim & Vigor came about and the challenges she faces growing her business. This and more on today's episode of Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. It's good to see you again, Michelle.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, and it's always good to catch up and hear what you're involved with and what's going on with Vim & Vigor. For our listeners, you worked in pharmaceutical, biotech, healthcare sector for more than a decade, and then you decided to start a business on your own. And what made you pick this particular niche?
I picked this particular niche mainly for a need for myself. I was doing pharmaceutical sales, driving for 4.5-5 hours at a time, and just noticed that my legs were really tired and achy at the end of the day. And a buddy who's a physical therapist said, "You should be wearing compression socks." In my mind, I was like, "Oh, compression socks. I don't know. You know, I'm in my early 30s. I think of my 98-year-old grandmother wearing this kind of nude-colored product that was ultra tight." But when I looked online, I learned about all these health benefits of the product, but didn't see anything that reflected any personal style or had any type of fashion to it. And so a light bulb went off, especially with my experience in healthcare, as well as my love of fashion. I was able to take a fashionable product and have all the functionality of it as well.
Well, many people thinking about compression hose get the same visual image
exactly, that
you do.
Not a positive one.
No, but you know, as I know and you know, as you market it, I mean, teachers, flight attendants, travelers,
exactly.
Nurses are, you know, are a great target market for compression hose. And it's not just for varicose veins or running. It's, you know, pregnancy complications, circulatory disease, knee problems, joint damage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really broader base. Are you continuing to evolve that base?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where we're going. We're really marketing ourselves as a lifestyle compression sock. At the end of the day, who isn't sitting all day or standing all day for their jobs? And that has negative consequences on your health and your body throughout the day. And so compression socks can really help with that. Our job is really to just try to provide as much education as possible to the consumer, to let them know all about all of these health benefits, that it just doesn't help people who have a problem or who are sick or have some type of disease or anything like that. It's really anyone who sits all day or stand all day that aren't getting enough circulation throughout their body. They can really benefit from compression socks. I wear them every day. Everyone at Vim & Vigor wears them every day. And we have hundreds or thousands of customers that wear them every day as well.
I think Vim & Vigor is a very cool name for a company. Where did you come up with that? What's the genesis of
well,
that?
Well, Vim & Vigor is a really old expression. Vim means energy, vigor is health, and the combination of Vim & Vigor means vitality. And I would have a lot of people come up and say, "Oh, my grandmother used to say that." And so what I really liked about that expression is it's an old term that I'm kind of bringing back in and making it modern. Same thing how compression socks could be looked upon as an old product that had been around since the World War II. And I'm bringing in and making it modern. And so I really liked that play of what Vim & Vigor actually meant and the definition of it, but also kind of the concept of bringing something old and rejuvenating it and making it more modern to today's world.
Now, you never manufactured anything before.
No.
Did you sew much?
No. A funny story is when I launched Vim & Vigor and I was telling my dad about this, and I was like, "Dad, I'm starting this business." And he's like, "What's this business?" I was like, "I'm making compression socks." And he's like, "You don't know how to sew socks," which really speaks to my lack of ability to be that type of person.
So where are they made?
They're made in Taiwan. It's a family-owned company that have been making graduated compression socks for over 40 years. It's all they do. And Taiwan is really known for really great employment practices, health practices with all of their employees. So I really like that as well.
Are they your design?
They're all my design. They pretty much make compression socks exclusively for Vim and Vigor now, which is fantastic because we've grown so much.
And how big are you now? How many employees? What's the business look like?
Yeah, now we've gone such a change and a metamorphosis over the past year. We have about 19 to 20 employees now, which is crazy. You know, about a year ago, we had about 8 employees. And a couple months before that, we had 4. And so we've really kind of grown exponentially to really have departments and teams and all that good stuff.
And have you ever managed anything that big before in your career?
You know, I've managed teams before. I've managed teams of 10 to 15 people, but never multiple departments. You know, I have a sales department, I have a marketing department, I have accounting, I have operations. And so this is my first time managing all these different types of groups of people doing different things.
And this is your company. You're the owner.
I'm the sole proprietor, yeah.
Investor in this?
Yes, yeah. We don't have any outside funding, no venture capital or private equity or angel investment.
I know, and you are one of the few people that I know that turned down the opportunity to be on Shark Tank.
That's right, yep.
So tell me why you turned them down.
They approached us a little over a year and a half ago to be on Shark Tank when their producers reached out to us. And a couple of reasons. One is, sometimes they're not that nice to, you know, I see how they interact with a lot of the business owners.
Well, sometimes they're wise guys,
they're
right?
Wise
they beat you up.
Yeah, and that's one thing. That's not a reason why I didn't move forward with that. It's we have a company that's doing well. We're already growing and we're growing at a healthy rate. A lot of times when you bring in outside investors, whether it's a shark or a non-shark, the level of expectations they may have would be instead of growing 100%, they want to see 300%. I didn't want to push that. I didn't want to compromise the quality of the product or my team just to grow for growth's sake.
Right. You want to be more organic in growth,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Authentic, organic growth is kind of what I generally say.
Right. And I think you've almost coined the term authentic growth,
yeah.
Which I think is an excellent way to describe that.
Yeah.
And your explanation of why not Shark Tank makes a lot of sense. It's like an arranged marriage and you don't have much say-so. And your new partner in the marriage controls the purse strings.
Exactly. I don't like that.
No. Most people wouldn't like that. Is the business growing at a pace that you're comfortable with? Is it exceeding expectations? You know, what's the status of it at the moment?
I think what we're seeing is it's really meeting our expectations because a lot of the growth that we're planning is very deliberate, and you want to have that because you want to make sure you set your infrastructure appropriately for that growth. So I feel really amazed by the growth. And it's funny because when I first launched, I had no idea how we were going to do. I bought 10,000 pairs of socks. I had 2 part-time people on my team. And I said, well, it's a non-perishable item. If I just sell in the next year, that'd be fantastic. And we actually sold the first 10,000 pairs in about 4 to 5 months. I really feel like it's meeting to exceeding our expectations, which is great.
So let me talk about your personal story a little bit. I want you to share with our listeners your journey from growing up in New York City to college and graduate school in Chicago, a stint at London School of Economics, which is obviously very prestigious, and now Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
How did that all happen?
So I was born and raised in Queens. The neighborhood got kind of rough. A public school kid couldn't really continue to send me in public school when there's shootings and all that stuff. And so we moved to Long Island, and I spent my high school years and a little bit beyond that in Long Island and wanted to kind of get out of New York. And I love being in New York, but it can be very insular. New Yorkers think the only place to live is New York sometimes. I'm sure you can empathize with that, Arnie, since you're a fellow New Yorker.
Yes, I am.
And I wanted to leave and try other things. So I got into University of Chicago, which is an awesome school, moved there and lived there for over a decade, got right into the healthcare industry right away and just kind of loved it. And I've been, prior to Vim and Vigor, was in the healthcare industry for over 14, 15 years, which is awesome. When I was in school, also got a graduate degree at Kellogg Northwestern School of Business and majored in entrepreneurship and innovation, as well as marketing and a couple of other things, and really started to think about that. And my dad was a small business owner. He owned a Carvel, and people here generally don't know what Carvel is, but in the East Coast, Carvel ice cream store.
It's the Dairy Queen of New York.
It really is. It's an institution. Everyone growing up had a Carvel ice cream cake for their birthday. My dad had a Carvel franchise that he owned in Valley Stream, Long Island.
And did you work in it?
I worked in it from when I was 12, 13-hour days. So I kind of understood the concept of being a small business owner and just kind of thought that that was a natural path. I don't think I consciously thought that maybe, you know, it was kind of this unconscious thing just because it was in my blood and bones.
And then you got to Missoula, Montana.
From Chicago, I moved back to New York, worked for a biotech startup for a couple of years, and then had an opportunity to move to Montana because my partner is a history professor here. So he got a job, and I moved out here in 2011, and I've been here since.
So was it a little bit of a shock when you got out here compared to New York and Chicago?
Yeah, New York, Chicago, and then Montana. But I love it. I'm actually surprised by how much I love it. I realize that it's weird living in the city, living also a little bit in the suburbs and in a town like Missoula. You kind of have the best of everything in my mind without the traffic.
And it might be, in an interesting way, easier to launch your business here than in Chicago or in a place like New York.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have been able to start a business in Chicago or New York. And I feel the community here, the kind of the local grassroots appeal that my brand has had with a lot of people within not only Missoula, but the state of Montana has been overwhelming. And I don't know if we would have been this successful if we launched anywhere else.
Well, not only having that support network here in a specialized way, but the overhead costs.
You just have to bring in that much more revenue just to support what you've got going on. It's crazy. There's a lot of talent in Missoula. I mean, there's a lot of educated people who are hungry and smart, and it's great.
Are you also attracting employees here from other places?
Yeah, I hope so. We have this one woman. She was at Amazon for over a decade, our head of marketing, who's fantastic. She was looking to move to Missoula, and we were able to snag her, and she's been a great addition. And we're just noticing the type of people that we're hiring now are just on a higher caliber overall, which is great. We were able to afford those level of salaries and health benefits and all that now that we're growing even more.
Not that I want to penetrate the veil of secrecy.
Yeah.
But some people say that if you only have one product, you're not a company, you're a product.
Right.
Are you contemplating expanding from compression socks into any other areas?
Absolutely. We recently hired a product line manager, and her main job is research and development and new lines. And so having her on board will really help set the tone for that. We're looking at other types of things like arm sleeves. We're looking at leggings. I mean, we want to continue playing and being in the lifestyle market, but having wearables that have health benefits but that you can wear every day. The other things that we're looking at is how do we get corporations to really understand the value of compression socks for their employees? We're starting to have that conversation with some bigger employers about how we can help support their efforts to help their staff who sit all day or stand all day be a little bit healthier in the workplace.
And that's important.
It's really important.
And corporate fitness and all of those things are growing areas.
I call it occupational hazard of the job, right, of sitting or standing. The nurse market is huge for us. We sell our products at over 400 hospital gift shops where a lot of nurses and doctors wear our product. A lot of doctors recommend our product, which is fantastic. Those are different channels that we're looking into all the time. We're actually in the process of doing our two-year plan for where we want to go and expand right now with my team.
So as you're planning for your two-year expansion,
yeah,
if you were starting right over right now, what would you have done differently that you've done? What have you learned from these past few years?
Gosh, I feel like I learned something every day. I didn't know manufacturing. We really value the whole process of quality control. However, in the very beginning, I didn't put in the infrastructure and process for how we go about doing that. We received our first shipment of 10,000 pairs, sold it out in about 4 to 5 months. During that process, I saw how we were selling products, so I ordered more product. And when we got the product in and we were doing our quality control process, we noticed that over 1,000 pairs, close to that, were way too long. We ended up scrapping it, donating. I ate the money. It really sucked. Had I done it over, I really would have started earlier in the process of having that. It would have saved me some money. You're all about the product. At the end of the day, you have to lead and start with a really high quality product, which we have. So the customer never saw it. I ate it. And it would have been fantastic if I didn't have to go through that.
We're talking with Michelle Huey, who's the founder of Vim and Vigor, the lifestyle compression legwear company. So over the past 4 years, what's been the biggest challenge that you've had to face?
I think the most difficult challenge is just managing the level of growth, not only from like a product standpoint and a financial standpoint, but from a people standpoint. When you start a company and you only have one or two people, everyone does a little of everything. And there's an excitement of being able to do that and grow that. But as you grow, that's not sustainable. You can't have everybody doing a little of everything. And then you start to have departments and things like that. And helping to navigate and talk to my team about that, where they don't feel like they're losing the startup feel and losing the sense of ownership of all these different things, but allowing them to have more depth within their role has probably been the hardest challenge. And just making them feel that everyone's heard, even though we went from 4 to 8 to now 19 employees.
Don't you think that's a challenge that almost all startups face
in a
way?
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's all for one and one for all, and it's, you know, D'Artagnan and the Three Musketeers.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden now you have departments and heads
exactly.
of departments.
I recognize and really appreciate what a lot of my early people have done. We wouldn't be where we are now without their efforts. And so that's been difficult, but luckily I have a great team who is really kind of responsive to the growth, and they're really excited about the future.
Also, what is the most surprising thing that's happened over the past 4 years? The thing that caught you off guard, or you know, you didn't anticipate, and it all of a sudden just was upon you?
I think sometimes when you start a new business that doesn't really exist in concept, you don't know if it's going to work and if people would be so receptive to it. And I think the most surprising thing that makes me really excited is just how passionate people feel about the brand. I don't think I really expected that. I'm passionate about it. My team's apparently passionate about it. But then to have all these other people just really follow us and love us and can't wait for the next thing that we do, I don't think I quite expected that to happen, or so maybe it's happened so quickly.
So what excites you about the future? You're getting ready to go on this 2-year plan. You've been thinking
about
it. Yeah,
I'm so excited.
What excites you?
I'm so excited for my team. We've really restructured the team in a way that allows us to scale and grow in whole new areas. Every day I go into work and I think we've barely scratched the surface of where we can go. I think the level of education we can provide on the benefits of compression socks, you know, it's still not there. We still have a lot of work to do where people know about it, but they don't think so much how it can apply to them. And it can apply to such a wide range of people. And so I just get excited about the possibilities. I get excited about my team and the type of work that they're able to do and the type of effects and benefits they can have on people's lives. I mean, we honestly, on a daily basis, get love letters written to us. We have a fantastic customer service team and person who's in charge of it. And man, you know, just to hear the success stories of everyday people wearing our product makes me kind of get emotional sometimes,
which
is great.
Well, isn't that the key to the business, having happy customers?
Yes, absolutely.
Along with happy customers, are you meeting your financial goals and expectations? I mean, are you happy about the revenue you're generating?
I'm profitable, which is good. You know, I can pay health insurance, which is fantastic. And I can pay really good salaries or for Missoula as well, which is great. We're getting to expand. We're bringing 2 new people in January. We are definitely making our financial goals, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Michelle, what does the competitive landscape look like for you? I think when you got started, there wasn't much out there. But now that you've been successful, what's going on?
When we started, there was maybe only one competitor in the lifestyle compression sock market. Since then, past 4 years, there's been a lot of copycats. And in fact, we literally have people copying our entire site or copying the exact language and the exact designs of our product. And it's not quite the same, but I guess it's a form of flattery when you have a lot of competitors copying you.
Right, well, imitation
absolutely
is the greatest
form of flattery. That's it. You know, the way I think about it is I think it's really great. I think, you know, the more people we have out there talking about the benefits about compression socks will grow the pie and grow the market even further. It's really hard sometimes being a first mover. You know, when you're a first mover within a category that's new and unknown, it's a lot of work to provide that level of education. So the more competitors that we have, we welcome it.
I quickly sort of enumerated a few things, but why don't you share with our listeners, what are the benefits of the compression sock?
Compression socks, the way that it works is they're graduated compression. So it's made with a medical knitting machine, which means it's a little bit tighter in the ankle and becomes less tight as it goes up the leg. And it's that external pressure that helps increase circulation from your legs back to your heart and lungs and so forth and so on. With that, there are a lot of benefits. And there are clinical studies that show these benefits, which is reducing swelling, energizes legs, can help with muscle recovery. And our products are actually listed with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. It's a real product. And at our compression level, it's fantastic and safe to wear all day and every day. We're taking something that people look at for medical reasons, but it's really for healthy lifestyle and everyday wellness.
Sure. As a business manager now, business owner, someone whose decisions affect not only your employees now, you have a whole gaggle of employees, and your financial livelihood is also wrapped up in all that.
Yeah.
How do you decide what's right for you to do next? How do you make it work? How do you decide if you want to act on something or not, now that you have to take all these other factors into consideration?
True. You know, I think I look at a couple of factors. I look at the impact. When I look at new areas to go to, and they could be small or big, there are about three or four criteria that I look at in my mind. One is, what impact is that going to have on our business? The second thing is, what is the potential profitability that that could have? The third is the amount of effort that it's going to take to do something new. And the last is, how much of it is aligned to our vision and mission of the company. And so I look at those four criteria when I look at any type of go-to-market strategy or approach for pretty much everything that we do. And if it fits within that, there may be something that is medium in terms of profitability, but really, really low effort. Maybe we decide to do that coupled with things that are going to be higher effort, but can have a longer stretch or have a bigger impact. And so those are things that I think through. I don't make those decisions on my own. Now that I have such a really bright team and they're amazing, I really collaborate really strongly with them and saying, what should we do? What are we going to do together to take our business to the next level?
You know, and listening to you and knowing about you, you didn't start out thinking about having a compression stock company.
No.
But your educational preparation and your work in, you know, health and pharmaceutical and biotech really kind of gave you this tremendous base in which to now apply to the industry that you're in.
Absolutely.
So for folks that are listening to us that are starting new businesses or motivated by you to do something along these lines, what kind of advice would you give them based on what's happened with you over the last 4 years?
I think there's a couple of things. One is that actually one of my business school professors mentioned to me, if you want to start a business, there's one thing you have to be. And he says, you have to be irrationally optimistic. That's always stuck with me as something that I always think about, that positivity when things can seem so hard and so daunting. I mean, I never would have thought 4 years ago that we would be where we are now and the types of retailers that we are now. I think the second thing is, you have to be okay to fail. And I think that a lot of times people try to make things so perfect that they end up never launching anything. And part of the underlying thing that I see when I talk to aspiring entrepreneurs and I kind of coach them through the process, they constantly are wanting to make their product or whatever they have just perfect before they launch. And I say, well, when are you going to actually launch then? Because perfection is like not achievable sometimes. And sometimes, like, you know, even when I launched Vim and Vigor, I knew that my product was about 90, 95% there. But the only way I was going to be able to tweak and make it even better is if I get in people's legs. That's what we've done. And even to this day, 4 years later, we're constantly, with every batch that we get, making a little small tweak, small refinements, small changes. That's never going to end. Don't be so precious about it.
Sure.
Just do it.
It reminds me of the classic expression that I've run into a lot in my career. Someone will say, well, just as soon as the dust settles, we'll get started. The dirty truth is, the dust never settles.
Right, exactly.
You just got to put your foot out there in the water and, you know, start swimming.
Yeah, and there's a joke within Vim and Vigor. In the past, I'd be like, well, we'll do that when things slow down. And then everyone would laugh. It's like, it's never slowed down in 4 years. And now I know that it's an ongoing joke. We just do it knowing that, okay, if we need headcount, if we need resources, let's figure that out. But let's not wait to make it happen.
We've been talking with Michelle Yue, founder and CEO of Vim and Vigor, the lifestyle compression legwear company, about the progress of her company and where it's going to go in the future. And as always, it's a pleasure to visit with you, Michelle.
Thanks so much, Artie. It's been fantastic being here with you.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and contact from previous shows. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.